listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com. This is Wednesday, May 11th, 2016, and it's week 11 of the Fantasy Movie League spring season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm joined by Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, what did you do for Mother's Day?
My Mother's Day wasn't too exciting. Again, my girlfriend and I, we do not have children, so I think we had a kind of lazy Sunday during the day. We went out to dinner, and then we went to see Keanu, so like nothing too Mother's Day related for us.
Well, before we get into the week 10 review, what did you think of Keanu?
You know what? I laughed more often than I didn't, so it's kind of disappointing that it's not doing too hot, but it was a pretty funny movie.
Well, maybe this is its week. We'll see when we talk about week 11 here.
We shall see.
But week 10 was dominated. It probably isn't it's hard to say it was unexpected, but I think the volume was unexpected, or the amplitude was unexpected. Mother's Day getting Best Performer. If that's true, can Gary Marshall Presents Arbor Day be far behind? Are we in for a lot more of these movies?
You know, I made a joke in my column a couple of weeks ago on Mother's Day's opening weekend that Gary Marshall's Father's Day, starring, God, who is my cast? I believe it was Richard Gere, Bradley Cooper, and Hector Elizondo, because he's like required by law to appear in all Gary Marshall movies.
Yes.
Arbor Day is not that far off, but again, Gary Marshall, he's into his 80s by now, so like I don't know how many more of these there can be, but if I saw Gary Marshall's Arbor Day in 2021, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, he's rolling with these things. So I was really surprised to see like Saturday morning the report was that it was going to bring in like $7.5 million. And that surprised me because the pros had it pegged like in the mid sixes.
But like, I was always reluctant. It was always going to be about Sunday. Like again, last week's column, I knew it was going to get a bump. I thought like overall it was going to have a very small slide, probably 20% or less.
Right.
I didn't think it was going to build upon last week, so that surprised me even a little bit.
Yeah. So when it beat 11, the chatter on Monday was talking. It was funny to see how the chatter kind of grew on it on Monday as more things were coming out, and there was one chatter thread in particular that I wanted to call attention to. It was entitled PBO Actuals Coming In, Refreshing Commences by the legend of Herschel Leon. And this was one, we've seen this before, where the conversation got kind of heated as to sort of how much luck was involved in finding this versus folks who pegged this in certain ways. Because it was looking like early in the weekend that 2x Sunday with 6 Mother's Day was going to win. But then when Mother's Day completely blew up, it ended up the perfect combo, which I happened to play, which was, was Friday and 7x Mother's Day. And on this thread, I freely admitted that I feel like I got lucky because I picked that lineup for a different reason than was the reason why it did well. I thought that Friday, you know, I was in the Always Friday camp, and there was a lot of discussion about that. Even though the pricing was kind of prohibitive for Friday, I didn't think it was prohibitive enough to not play it, given the upside. So I ended up being right, but for completely wrong reasons.
Again, it was a little bit of luck, a little bit of skill. Like, anytime we've gone to daily pricing, Friday has been the way to go. And I felt very strongly like Mother's Day was the way to go because that movie was purely designed to play last Sunday and it like exceeded expectations. So like I set my lineup early in the week. That was my coma lineup. I stuck with it. I never changed and it worked out for me and a lot of other people as well.
It did. And even though things got heated on the thread, I think it ended on a high note. We've read responses like this before, but I think it's appropriate to read it again now. The last post in the thread, at least as we're recording, was by Ikakatalans. I don't ever know how to pronounce that. I always reference this person as IK. And to paraphrase, what was written here was, I liken it to poker. You and I get all our money pre-flop. I have aces and you have kings. You get a third king on the flop and pull ahead. Nothing comes from the turn and I end up spiking an ace on the river. We both made theoretically correct plays pre-flop, but I got lucky in the end to win the pot. So even if you aren't a poker player, the idea there that you can have information that would lead you to make a certain decision, and then life happens, and you never know whether or not you're going to, like I did, get lucky for the wrong reasons or get unlucky for unexpected reasons.
Again, like, you know, the best poker players in the world, like, there's a reason there's the same guys at the table, the end table, every single time in the World Series of Poker. But, like, even those guys, you still need the luck of the draw.
Yeah, this game is combinations of luck and skill. And if you read my favorite book on this topic, or if you're playing the podcast drinking game, you could make my 538 reference coming up here. In Nate Silver's book, he talks about how games of chance like roulette, that's completely random. And a game like poker is some skill and some randomness. I would like to think of
Fantasy League.
Right, yeah. I would like to think of Fantasy Movie League as slightly more skill than poker, but not so much. It's not the same amount of skill as like professional basketball, right? I mean,
totally agree. Like, you know, I could probably get on a lucky run and play poker, but if I were like, I can't play basketball for the life of me. I wish I could, but I can't. I wouldn't stand a chance. Whereas poker, you can kind of get on those runs. And I had the over under on when you were going to make a Nate Silver reference on about the 7.5 minute mark. I took the under and I won again. So
score.
I'm on a roll here.
We'll get the drink ready because there's another drink reference coming later. So a ton of people played this. 1,933 people played it as Perfect Cinema. But it was interesting. When the Thursday number came in low on Civil War, a ton of people appeared on Friday morning to switch to the two Sunday lineup. So there was the really good post that Butters usually does on the top 100. Something like 60% of the top 100 played two Sundays instead of the one Friday. So it was interesting how the top 100 ended up playing heavier on the two Sundays than the general player population, which appeared to play heavier on what ended up being Perfect Cinema.
Again, the $25 million on Thursday night for Captain America, a little bit behind Ultron, but it wasn't so far behind it that it made me waver, so I'm glad I stuck with Friday.
Yeah, I thought I stuck with Friday, but again, it was for the wrong reason, so what do I know?
Well, sometimes the wrong reasons work out the right way.
Now, if we look at the overall standings, our friend The Sandlot still sits at the top and is one of three people to make it so far this season into the Billionaires Club. So that's The Sandlot...
Exclusive club.
Very exclusive. Sandlot is looking at $15 million. Beowulf's Theater is about $10 million behind that. Nathan Mahoney's Cineplex is at $1.4 billion. And then there's a couple other folks in the high 990s right after that. I think it's probably, depending on, I mean, anything can happen in these last 2 weeks, but it's probably among those top three players. Sandlot's got a nice cushion there, but we saw a $10 million difference between different plays this week, thanks to the bonus and some of the other things that happened. So anything's still possible.
And there's going to be a swing this week. And I think looking forward to next week when you've got three big wide releases. This week, again, we'll get to it in a little bit, two fairly low-key wide releases. So you just had to play the right Captain Americas. But next week, it could be a swing week. So we'll see how that plays out.
Now, the second half league, we still have quite a few folks who have played because folks played a couple of Perfect Cinemas in a row at the very beginning, there's lots of crowdedness at the top of the second half league. I'm counting, let's see, what is this? There's seven different people who were in the $465 million area. Led right now by Molly Pruitt Cineplex. In second place, Haggerty House, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Meme Warriors, which I love that name, Mischief Managed, Penny Luckett, Crusty Seats Cinema, which I don't want to go there, I don't think, and Saw's Cineplex.
Yeah, so it's packing pretty tightly there.
It is, so lots of competitiveness there. Let's take a look at how folks have done on the awards this season. We haven't caught up with that in just a little while.
We shall catch up right now.
So last time I think we covered this, we had a couple of score winners. We've got a couple of ticket winners pending, but I love this cinnamon name here as well. The Week 10 score winner, Rochelle Enthusiasts.
Any Seinfeld fans out there will get that reference immediately.
And you might, I have this image conjured up of, wasn't it a home plate collision between George and,
and Miss, the divine Miss Bette Midler. Yeah. And there was a whole Tonya Harding thing going on. And if you remember, like when they made it a musical, like, you know, Kramer accepted one of the Tonys for it. It's just, there's a lot of Seinfeld. There were multiple episodes dealt with Rochelle.
Now, speaking, so you mentioned a drinking word. Do you realize that? You mentioned the Tonys.
Oh, well, that's a nice little segue there. Inadvertent, but yeah, I'll take it.
So I happen to be on the mobile app beta. So I don't know if you are, but I've had a lot of fun playing around with the mobile app. And on Monday, I happened to be on a run for a late lunch break on Monday afternoon when this whole thread started getting heated. So here I am listening to Hamilton, which I'm sure you know was nominated for 16 Tonys, a record.
As we expected.
So you can take your drink if you're playing along. And it was one of my favorite feature of the mobile app is it gives you push notifications if someone comments on a thread that you have already contributed to. So it's a cool way to stay up to date.
Which is a cool feature that people have been asking for a while. But, like, yes, like, it's very cool things, like, being worked out. Like, you know, I think it feels like we're getting pretty close.
Yeah, it does. They haven't announced when that's going to be announced yet. But here I am on my run, you know, listening to Hamilton when I got a notification that not Angry Geek, but Civil Geek had just posted a response. So that was kind of funny.
I'd love to have him on the show at one point to find out if he actually is civil or if, like, he is actually angry.
Well, I'm looking forward to when this gets a wider release, but I'm really happy with it. The team's been really great about taking feedback. If you're lucky enough to be in the beta, keep the feedback coming. The devs absolutely love the stuff they've gotten so far, and it's better as a result. So be on the lookout for that here pretty soon.
Like, from day one, I think the team's been really great about taking feedback in. Like, now we're almost, like, at the one-year mark, but, like, all of the comments that have come in, like, over the past year have definitely been going into this app, which I don't know when it's officially going to go live, but it feels like it's getting there.
Now, before we get to our very special interview, which I hadn't teased quite yet, but you're pretty happy with it, right?
Oh, I'm very happy with
it. Let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Loot Crate. So as I think you're probably aware by now, if you're a regular listener, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. The way this works is for less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items in a box. That includes licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and other kinds of stuff. If you get in your order before the 19th of the month at 9 p.m. Pacific and subscribe, you get that month's crate. And so if you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML and you enter the code FML, you get $3 off of any new subscription. Now, the new stuff this month is kind of themed towards, because we've got a couple superhero releases this month, including Civil War, which we just had. The idea there being that these superhero movies have these big clashes of epic performance, so that makes May the perfect time to put a spotlight on characters and items of great power. So what they're doing for this month's crate is you've got something you can carry, something for your kitchen, a cool figure to go with your monthly tee and pin. And it's got stuff featuring two Marvel teams plus Warcraft. I think we're still not clear on whether it's Dragon Balls or Dragon Ball Z. I think we got some inconclusive feedback on the chatter for that.
I spoke to some guys in the office. It seems to the consensus of the guys I talked to, it seems to be Dragon Ball Z.
All right, Dragon Ball Z it is. So no one crate should have all this power, but it can be yours if you sign up at www.lootcrate.com/FML.
Again, it's cool stuff. And, like, again, if for some reason you don't like what you have in your crate, it's, like, fantastic to trade. And less than $20 a month, like, that's what a normal T-shirt usually costs. And I've seen many crates that have very cool T-shirts in them. So it's actually a really good deal.
So I had this really great idea for interview guest, only I had it would have been better prior to Mother's Day, but
well, nothing against Angry Geek or The Sandlot or our contest winner. This is far and away my favorite interview guest of the podcast so far.
So I wish I had thought of this before Mother's Day, but I had already booked The Sandlot last week. But I'll just let my interview pre-tape introduce our very special guest on the interview, on this interview segment this week. So today is the Monday after Mother's Day, the holiday, and after the weekend where Mother's Day, the movie, dominated the best performer at the box office. So I thought it would be no better time to have my own mom as a guest here on the podcast. So Mom, welcome to the podcast.
Why, thank you very much.
Now, did you have a good Mother's Day? Now, I know you didn't see a movie because we did something else.
I've had a wonderful weekend because I got to do the something else.
Well, so the something else, we can, you know, not name names here, but it just so happened that your favorite entertainer had three shows this weekend, and you spent your weekend watching your granddaughter.
Yes, I did. She was marvelous, and we thoroughly enjoyed all three performances.
Well, I'm glad you did. Now, what was your what did your lineup look like last week? What did you play with?
Well, I had to go with the Mother's Day. I did put Mother's Day in, but I didn't put it in as many times as everybody else did.
Right.
I went with Captain America on a Saturday because I didn't want to spend all my money on the opening.
On the Friday, right. It was a lot more expensive.
Right. Yeah, it was quite a bit more expensive. And so I did put Mother's Day in because I figured that would be the sentimental favorite. And I thought for those people that didn't really care about that, I would put Barbershop in because you have to have some diversity. And I put The Boss in because there was a little bit of comedy in that one.
So it's fair to say that you hedged, that you're in the camp that hedges a little bit, that a bunch of other folks have been discussed on the program before, go all in on maybe one or two, but it sounds like you had three or four different movies on your screens this week.
I did, and I not that I necessarily would want to see all of these movies, but I figure there's lots of other folks out there that did, so I might as well take advantage of that.
Now, what's the over-under on how many Marvel Cinematic Universe movies you've actually seen? Yeah, that's what I thought.
You can't even go into double digits.
It's probably digits, right? Probably seen...
No. Did you ever see a Marvel when you were younger?
They didn't come out when I was younger. It was because...
Okay, then...
About the closest we had when I was a kid was like the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeves.
Okay, well, that one I saw.
Well, that one we saw together.
Yes, well, if we didn't see it together, I'm sure I didn't see a Marvel because there wouldn't have been a whole lot of reason for me to go.
No, they kind of needed the CGI stuff to catch up before they could make the Marvel movies really kind of what they are today. You were kind of stuck with blue screen and models and that kind of stuff in the 70s and 80s.
Right. But, you know, they made some really great sci-fi movies back in the 70s and 80s.
Speaking of, one of the conditions we had of you agreeing to come on the program was that you get to tell an embarrassing story about me. And probably my most embarrassing movie story involves the first time I saw Star Wars. So why don't you try to tell that story and then I will correct you because I'm sure that you'll get a bunch of stuff wrong.
Well, you know, elaboration is part of the story.
First liar has no chance, I think is what Dad says.
Right. Yes, it's in the family. I think you were around 7 and we decided that instead of going to a regular theater where you might not be as comfortable, we went to a drive-in. And as soon as they put the first spaceship up there, you're in the back seat, jumping up and down, just having a marvelous time. And the first time you saw a lightsaber battle, you were in the back seat recreating it with your own imaginary opponent yelling, "Bad-o!" And that's how you went on and on and on during that entire show. Finally, when it was over and we drove home, you fell asleep in the back seat. You've never done that on the way back from the movie, but you'd expended so much energy.
Well, sure. I mean, if you're going to fight the bad guys, you deserved a nap on the way home, right?
Right. And then that Christmas, you decided you needed to have a Jedi Knight uniform, but the Jedi Knights didn't exist at the time, so we had to come up with a uniform that, in your mind, looked like a Jedi Knight. It turned out Santa Claus actually brought you one.
Now, describe what this looked like, because it actually looked, it couldn't look anything less like what Jedis would actually walk around with, like the brown, you know, the tan tunics and the brown robes and all that. What did mine look like? Because I had a very specific vision for this in 1977.
Well, again, this is before the Return of the Jedi, so we didn't actually have anything to go with other than your imagination. It was actually a pattern for a kind of a jumpsuit that looked like a pilot's jumpsuit that they would wear.
Right.
And it had epaulets on the sleeves and lots of pockets, and it had different patches showing the different battles that you'd been through. When actually we went to an Army-Navy surplus store and looked for patches that looked futuristic, that didn't actually have like 37th Airborne on it.
Right. What was and a labor of love?
Yeah, and you had a belt buckle that looked like two crossed lightsabers, when in fact they were cannons.
Well, I was told they were lightsabers, so I believed they were lightsabers.
Well, by the time you got it, they were lightsabers.
Well, there's some pictures that were taken on that Christmas morning that, if I have my way, will never find their way on the internet. Because I also received a lightsaber for Christmas that year. And
yes, you did.
Yeah. I'm not sure you had to ask me to pose or if I just started striking poses, but I looked pretty, about as serious as a seven-year-old could in a blue jumpsuit that looked a little more like Top Gun in hindsight, but, you know, you had to work with what you had.
You had to work with what was there. Yeah, we didn't know that there would be robes with tie sashes instead of an actual warrior-looking uniform. But, no, we didn't have you pose. You just picked up the lightsaber and had a battle similar to the battle you had in the backseat.
Well, there you go. Just so that people can get the right picture here, do you remember what the car was?
Oh, the Blue Nada.
It was the Blue Nada. It was a 76 light. It was a 76 Ford Granada in light blue, and it had the bench seat. You remember that?
Yeah.
That didn't work out so well in later years when I had to sit in the front seat with you, and I was good 6 inches taller than you were.
Well, no, it didn't. But I guess that was my fault for being short, raising a tall.
Well.
Child.
You're forgiven if that helps.
Oh.
Now, what about your own movie? So I remember as a kid, your favorite movie was always Gone with the Wind, when that would come on every year. And I would never make it to the end of it because sometimes it even span it over two nights. But is that still your favorite, or what do you think your favorite?
That is. I could never get you and your dad to get past the train scene where they had all the wounded in Atlanta. But I read the book when I was a teenager, and I had, in my imagination, made all those incredible ball gowns and beautiful parties. I had that part of the book down in my mind just perfectly, and the movie did quite well with it. Being a girl, I didn't think too much about war, but by the time they actually were fighting the war, I was so invested in the movie that I couldn't let go.
Right.
And and to see the struggles that people were going through, was probably the first adult topic that I watched when I was a kid.
So you read the book first? Do you remember what kind of gap there might have been between reading the book and seeing that movie for the first time, or did you actually see the movie first and then read the book?
No, I had read the book. To date, I've probably read the book at least 7 or 8 times, but I had read the book at least twice before I saw the movie.
Well, and you always have a book in your hand. I can't remember you never not having a book you're reading.
Yeah, well, we're readers. That's what we do.
Well, yeah.
So, yes, and it was an enjoyable book for me. So, because it was so visually different, it was so much of a contrast between the pre-war and the war days,
right,
and then finally the after-war. I think that's why it stuck so much to me, is that it showed a part of society that I had never been exposed to before.
Well, I'll cop to this, Mom. The reason that I never could get past the train scene is because that scene scared the crap out of me the first time I saw it. I think you probably introduced that scene to me a little bit too early. So I'd never seen that many people in, like, abject pain before. And that just, yeah, I was done after that.
Well, I cry every time I get to that point. And, you know, I'm quite a bit older than I was the first time, but I will cry if I saw it again. Now, in my defense, I did not let you see Old Yeller.
No, you did not. I'll give you props on that, Mom.
Yeah, so we got learned a lesson on Gone with the Wind, so.
Well, let me get you out of here with this, Mom. What about You and Dad have been playing here for almost a little bit over a full season now. Question I always ask anybody on the podcast, what do you wish you knew before you started playing that maybe a new player could learn from?
I don't know that I have enough background to know about all of the special effects that go into the movies that are what is the draw for the current movie viewer. It wasn't a draw for me because it wasn't something that I had, but it seems there's a lot of younger people that are going to the movies because the action is important to them. But I don't know what goes into doing all that action. So I don't have enough technical background.
So don't underestimate action movies is your advice.
Yeah. They may have absolutely inane plots. Some of them do, some of them don't. But the whole fact that you put yourself into the role, and I think that's what happened to you when you were a little boy. You put yourself into that Star Wars role, and it's something that's connected with you throughout your life. So you see more in an action movie than I do.
I see. Okay, well, good advice. Well, Mom, thanks for taking time out of your evening. When warn Dad that he'll get his shot when we get a little bit closer to Father's Day, and he can explain what a Gazintu is when we do that.
Oh. I'm sure the whole country needs to know that.
Oh, I'm sure they do. But thanks for joining me, and I'm sure I will see you soon.
I love you. Thank you.
I love you too, Mom. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so which one of those moments do you think is most embarrassing for me? Like, what do you think was the most revealing part of that?
You know what? I don't think the lightsaber battle in the back of, like, the drive-in is that embarrassing. If that's the most embarrassing story you can come up with, you've probably lived, like, you know, a very little blessed life there. My favorite part, though, and again, those pictures, we all have Halloween parties like that. I remember when Return of the Jedi came out. That's when I was in about second grade. I had a very cool Ewok costume. If the pictures of that were to surface, I don't know if I'd be too embarrassed. But my favorite part, it just seemed to be the ultimate mom thing to say when she was talking about her lineup, how she included Barbershop because she needed some diversity in the lineup. Like, just gold.
Yeah.
That's an interview I think I'm going to listen to multiple times because I think I'm going to hear something new every time I listen.
Back that up and try again?
I may do it like right after we're done recording.
All right. Do you have in your family, do you have a cool old car name for one of your old cars like we have with the Blue Nada?
God. I'm trying to think. We had some – like I remember we had like a – it was not like, remember there was the Dodge Caravan was like the definitive minivan of the 80s. Yeah. We had like the poor man's version, which was the Colt Vista, which we just referred to as the Vista. For some reason, this thing had four wheel drive and it was a stick shift. I have no rational explanation for it, but that was one of the family cars growing up.
It was a stick shift van. Am I understanding that correctly?
Oh yeah. It was a stick shift minivan.
Oh, nice.
So like, welcome to the 80s.
Why don't they make that anymore?
I don't know. I haven't seen one on the road in years. I believe they are extinct.
Well, the Blue Nada had a simulated white leather top to it.
Ooh, nice.
And the bench seat, because they don't make these anymore, if you don't know what that is, instead of having the seats in the front be independently movable, it was one big piece of plastic that went across the whole front of it. And when
sometimes it was vinyl. It wasn't always plastic.
Well, you know what I mean. Like the underpinnings of it. It was one. It was one big bench.
That I slide have on the sat same in set a rims. Car like that, and those are pretty epic.
And
I think they should bring those back for some cars.
It was fine when we first got the car, and I was 6 or 7 years old. But we didn't get rid of that car until I was 15, and by then my mom's 5'4", and by then I was 6'4", on my way to 6'6". So it was really uncomfortable for me to sit in the front car of that seat with her because she had to move the whole bench up so that she could reach the pedals and then my knees would be crammed into the glove box.
And one more question. Did it have wood paneling on the sides?
Sadly, no. It did not have wood paneling.
Well, that would have really been the cherry on top of the sundae.
Now, what I will tease, though, is I'm planning on having my pop on for Father's Day, and there is another story involving that car that there's a big family discrepancy over whose fault it was that the driver's side mirror got broken by an errant baseball throw, and we'll cover that for Father's Day.
It cannot be mid-June soon enough for me.
Well, let's move on here to week 11. So we got a couple new movies, we got a ton of holdovers, and you know, we tend to, when we have a big movie weekend like we had last weekend, we tend to see rebounds where some of the returning films they don't go down more than 40%. Sometimes because everybody went to, in this case, Civil War, you see some of these movies, maybe they only have a bounce of like 20% or 30% and those kind of things. So before we talk about the new ones, what do you think about the holdovers and what do you think, what has a good chance to have a good hold compared to last week?
Again, I think it's obviously still going to all be about Captain America this week. And I love that we live in a world now where you make like $178 million, and that's considered a little soft, even though it was the fifth biggest movie of all time. So I still think this weekend's all about Captain. And even though Saturday is going to be the biggest day, the way it's been priced, you can only play it once. So I'm leaning toward Double Friday as my anchor and just trying to fill out the rest of it. I'm trying to figure... I think I've got a way where I can have the two Fridays, a Jungle Book, and filler. That's kind of what I'm leaning towards now, but I'm still playing around with a bunch of potential lineups.
Yeah, the filler's tough, and I'm seeing the same thing. On Chatter, people aren't in love with Friday, but I kind of like it again, but for different reasons. Because it's, if you take, so ProBoxOffice.com has their weekend forecast out, and they've got it at $81 million for the whole weekend. If you split that up according to the pricing, that gives you about 43% on Saturday, about 29% on Sunday, and about 28% for Friday. If you put all that in, you know, that makes Friday bringing in about $37 million or so, and that actually makes it a pretty good value. if you believe in that number. And it's actually got some wiggle room in there as well. The one that looks like it's going to get – the ones that look like they're going to get decent bounces, though, are Zootopia and you mentioned Jungle Book as well. Zootopia is priced so
again,
low.
It's nice to be at Disney right now. Zootopia has just got such a reasonable price. So if I can't figure out a combo with Jungle Book that works, it's probably going to be something revolving around Zootopia. And one of the new releases this week, I'm going to monitor the Thursday numbers very closely because I think that could be an interesting play as well.
Well, let's talk about those here for a second before I talk about what I'm looking at here in terms of plays here for the week. So what do you think of The Darkness? We haven't had a horror movie here in a while.
Again, it's like the theater count is pretty low. I think it's a little below 1,800 last time I checked. But there hasn't been a horror movie, really like a straight up horror movie, since The Witch in mid-February. So I think that's working. And also this is Friday the 13th, which is always a like a big bonus for like a horror movie.
Ooh,
like,
I missed that one.
Just subconsciously, I think that could help play into it. And I don't think, like, if it clears $5 million and just gets into that $6 and $7 million range, I think it's potentially worth playing. So I just want to see Thursday if it does well. That could change my lineup, like, beyond my two Captain Americas. So I'm just waiting to see. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it did below $5 million, but I'm going to monitor that really closely on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And the Kevin Bacon
well.
Factor. There is Kevin Bacon involved.
Well, that's true. I don't like the low theater count like you do. I don't like that Pro Box Office, it opened its long-range forecast on this movie 6 weeks ago or so at $6 million. It moved down to $5.5 million with their long-range forecast report, which came out this past Saturday. And then when they got the weekend forecast out, it's down at $4.5 million. So that's not a positive trend. But still, I mean, it's hard to discount horror movies because those fans come out in droves regardless of theater count sometime. I'm going to look really closely at the Showtime counts when those come out on Thursday. That might influence me into maybe taking it as a filler. I'm kind of with you, though. I like the idea of doing two times Friday and Jungle Book and trying to find some fillers with that. So I might use it as a filler, but I'm not comfortable using it more than about three times, I think. There's a little bit of risk there.
Yeah, and even though the theater count's low, there's plenty of history of the low-budget Jason Blum-produced horror movies overperforming just enough to put it in bonus contention. So right. I'm going to watch on Thursday, but definitely worth a look, but there's certainly risk involved.
Well, before the good, before the higher than I expected, at least, Jungle Book weekend forecast from Pro Box Office, I had as my coma lineup, I had two Fridays, three Darkness, and three Keanu. I might go back to that if there's decent Showtime numbers or decent Thursday night numbers on The Darkness. Now, what about our other movie this week is The Money Monster.
Again, those are two. Again, we've got George Clooney, we've got Julia Roberts, who are big movie star names, but as always, that doesn't necessarily transfer into, like, big box office. Julia Roberts really, again, used to be the biggest female star in the world. I think she's at a different place in her career, and, like, it's been about 15 years since she's legitimately carried a blockbuster largely on her name. So I'm a little leery on that. I think it's going to come down to George Clooney's star power, which in this type of movie where he's in his political slash serious mode isn't always a sure thing. And I sent my column in a little while ago. I'm sure it'll be going up either Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Like, since the year 2000, I think George Clooney's movies can be broken down into three categories. You have Popcorn George, which is your Gravity, your Ocean's movies, your Perfect Storm. He's got his, you know, like, kind of his dramatic roles where he's like letting loose with the Coen brothers or like Up in the Air or The Descendants. And then he's got his serious slash political movies, which he also directs, where he's trying to get a message across, be it Ides of March, Syriana, or like Monuments Men and like a bunch of others. And it seems like of the George Clooney, the three genres, the one that has the lowest openings in domestic totals every time is when he's in serious and political mode, which is kind of what I think Money Monster falls into. So I think it could struggle to break $10 million. I don't love it this weekend.
Yeah, same. So same analysis as I just mentioned for The Darkness. It, Long range forecast opened on this one at 11 million, was down to 9.5 this past Saturday, and then the weekend forecast goes for 8.9. And it of the two new movies, I think you can make a better case for The Darkness because it's a horror movie and we haven't had a horror movie for a while. I'd stay away from The Money Monster.
We haven't for a while. Like, I just don't sense any excitement around this. And like Jodie Foster, while she's well respected as a director, she's never directed a hit movie before. And again, Julia Roberts, like, not at the same place she once was. George Clooney can draw well for a certain type of movie. I don't think it's the type of movie that Money Monster is, so I'm staying away.
I think my mom might be all in on George Clooney movies, but, you know.
Well, I'm sure she's going to play it, and we'll see how she does.
She was
I hope you steer her away from that.
She was always big on Cary Grant. She didn't mention that, but
I see the similarities there.
The Bishop's Wife is, I think, her second favorite movie after Gone with the Wind.
Dear, wow, I need to wrap my head around that one.
Okay, well, that's it for week 11 here on the Fantasy Movie League podcast for the spring season, week 11. You can find me, as always, on Twitter at NerdGuru. Patrick, we can usually find you at The Box Office Guy.
As always.
The league itself, of course, can be found at FML_movies on Twitter and on Facebook under Fantasy Movie League. You can still get your own Fantasy Movie League gear at FantasyMovieLeagueShop.com. Good luck to everybody on week 11. Until next week.
This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at FantasyMovieLeague.com.